seen on foot during a dense fog. And damn it, the one time he'd failed to set his house alarm. He'd been so wrapped up with Kate, seeming to read the silent apology in his expression. She gave him a tiny smile and an almost imperceptible shake of her head. "Bridger," Parsons said, "you must have a phone. Where is it?" Zach nodded toward the sofa. "Side pocket of my jacket." Theo responded to another signal from Cal and went in search of Zach's phone. When he produced it, Cal said, "What about yours?" He squeezed Kate's waist. "In my shoulder bag on the console table by the front door." When Theo had both phones in hand, Cal said, "Pitch them into the fireplace. The key fob, too." Theo looked conflicted, but he moved aside the fire screen and did as he'd been told. As the items landed on the embers, the four of them watched them flare. Sparks flew up the chimney. One of the smoldering logs reignited with a loud pop. Zach didn't know until that instant what he was going to do, but he'd built a career relying on gut instinct and lightning-quick reflexes. He flung his arms out to his sides, giving Parsons a clear shot at his bare chest. "Hey!" Parsons swung the pistol away from Kate and aimed it at Zach. Theo cried out, "Cal!" Kate shouted, "No!" And Zach said, "Everybody calm the fuck down." He'd said that 1,000 times in huddles after a play had gone terribly wrong and hot-headed team members began blaming one another for the blunder that had cost them yardage. With the right intonation, it had never failed to get attention, and it didn't now. The other three had frozen in place, but all were poised for action, watching him, waiting to see what he would do next and act accordingly. "Let Kate go," he said to Parsons, keeping his arms extended. "I'm an open target. Shoot me." "No," Kate said in an adamant whisper. "Even once you did," Theo blurted, "because only you can pull the plug on your ex." He was swaying from side to side, his eyes darting from Cal to the pistol, to Zach in a manic circuit. Cal growled, "Quiet, Theo." "So this is Eben's idea," Zach said. "You kill us, and all his problems will go away? I seriously doubt that, guys, but I guess it's possible. On the other hand, your problems will have just started. Eben puts Kate and me on TV, makes us big news, and 24 hours later, you knock us off." He smacked his lips. "For you two, that plan blows." Zach prayed to God that his hunch was right and that what he was about to do wouldn't get Kate killed, in which case he would have to kill Parsons. Not that he would mind that all that much, but he would hate it for Melinda and her unborn child. Looking directly at Parsons, he said, "Congratulations on your baby." Theo squeaked. "Baby? Hasn't he told you yet, Theo? He and Melinda are pregnant with their firstborn." Cal's stern expression showed signs of weakening. "How do you know about the baby?" "We visited with Melinda today," Kate said. Parsons took his eyes off Zach long enough to glance at her. "What the hell for?" "I'll be happy to tell you all about it, but not while you're threatening our lives." Zach's mention of his wife and expected child had the desired effect. Cal's gun hand wasn't as steady as it had been. "You had no right to bother my wife." "Actually, as an officer of the court, I did have a right," Kate continued in that same measured voice. "But Melinda was already bothered when Zach and I got to your house. She'd been unable to reach you. She was crying because Eben Clark is back in your life, and she despises him." Zach said, "She hates even more that you ask how high every time Eben says jump." "Shut up, Bridger. You don't know anything about me." Zach started walking toward them in an unhurried tread. "I know you'd like hearing what Kate has to say. Why don't you stop this craziness and listen? Melinda did. She listened hard. It beats me why she loves you so much, but the poor lady does, and..."
"I said to shut up."
"You're dog shit for making her worry herself sick, especially now that she's having your kid."
Cal's chest was heaving with agitation. Zach feared he might have pushed him too far, so he stopped several feet short of them.
Kate's barefooted. Her feet must be cold. I know mine are. But I think you're the one with cold feet, Cal.
He allowed the other man time to answer, but when Parsons just chewed the inside of his cheek and didn't say anything, Zach continued.
See, what you've done makes no sense. It's like you're going for two when you've already got the game won with the touchdown.
What the hell are you talking about?
It's a football analogy, Kate said. He uses them a lot.
Zach said,
I figure that if you had really and truly come all this way with the intention of killing Kate and me on Eben's behalf, you would have just shot her, then me, and been done with it. You wouldn't have bothered with this B-movie standoff. You wouldn't have taken the trouble to destroy our cell phones. What would have been the point? We'd be dead. Now, if you'd come to kill us, you'd have already done it, and we'd be halfway back to Atlanta by now.
He's right, Cal, Theo said.
Zach and the other two looked at him. He was no longer swaying. His voice wasn't quavering, and his eyes weren't darting around as though afraid to light.
Why drag this out? Enough with the intimidation. Let's just get it over with, okay?
Okay, Parsons tightened his grip on the revolver.
Zach thought, fuck me, wrong call.
He locked eyes with Kate. Then Parsons dropped his gun hand to his side and said,
We confess.
Chapter 35. Kate was too stunned to move or speak. She'd been certain that the last thing she would see was Zach looking at her with desperation. Cal withdrew his arm from her waist and walked over to an end table, where he set the pistol down. Having regained her breath, Kate asked,
How did you know we were here?
Didn't, but after seeing the stories on TV, you two together, the innuendos being bandied about, we figured you might have gone into hiding, and this was the logical place to look first. But how'd you find my house? Zach asked.
I work in a library, Theo said, and gave an apologetic shrug. County records, process of elimination. And then for $5, a guy at a filling station on the edge of town told us which road to take off the highway. He said your private drive wasn't marked, but to go until we couldn't go any farther, and there it would be.
Did Eben provide the pistol? Zach asked Cal.
It belongs to my father-in-law. Eben hasn't plotted your demise yet. He was counting on us to help with that. We wanted no part of it, of him.
If you didn't come to kill us, why did you think a gun would be necessary? Zach asked. Why all this tough guy crap?
Theo muttered.
Told you, Cal.
Which he ignored.
Would you have greeted us like long-lost friends? Cal asked Zach.
I couldn't be certain of your reaction to seeing us and wanted protection, just in case. That chain across the road seemed like a warning for intruders to keep out.
It was a warning for...
All right, Kate interrupted. Let's not dwell on the past 10 minutes. I'm more interested in the next 10 or 20, or however long it takes to talk this through. But before we begin, I'd like to get my boots. Zach is right. My feet are cold. Zach and she went upstairs and finished dressing. They were back down in under 5 minutes. Theo was seated on the hearth. Cal had taken Zach's favorite chair. The coffee table had been moved back to its rightful place. Kate wondered if they'd guessed why it had been pushed up against the sofa. Worse, did they know? That prospect made her queasy. To put her mind at ease, she asked how long they'd been inside the house before she'd walked into the kitchen.
Only a few minutes, Cal replied. We thought maybe you'd heard us come through the side door and were coming down to check.
Maybe I did hear you on a subconscious level and just didn't realize what had awoken me.
Self-consciously, she glanced at Zach, where he had sat down beside her on the sofa. He wasn't looking at her, however. He had a bead on Cal. He said,
Well, you're here, and we're listening. Where's the confession?
Cal took a deep breath and began by saying,
I'm sorry, Bridger.
There was humility in his posture as well as in his voice.
The apology is long overdue. I should have contacted you years ago and told you how sorry I was
M for what happened to your wife.
She wasn't my wife at the time, but she was a person with years left to live, and those years were taken from her.
They were, yeah. He lowered his head. I'm sorrier than I can say.
That goes for me, too, Theo said. But nothing we say will offset what we did or didn't do that night. Speaking for Cal and me, we wish we could rewind, erase it. We'd do anything to make up for what happened.
Anything except tell the truth about it at Eben's trial, Zach said. You could have done that.
Kate placed her hand on his knee, a silent signal for him to exercise restraint. His antagonism toward them was understandable. It wasn't only Rebecca's life they'd destroyed. They'd also derailed his. But they were talking. She wanted to keep them talking. Turning her attention to Theo, she said, "Is that what you came here to confess? You lied on the witness stand?" Theo looked at Cal, who said,
"Yes."
"You understand that you've just admitted to perjury," Kate said.
"Yes."
"Your lawyer won't be happy with you."
"I'm not happy with me.
I've got to own up to my part in this or I'll never be happy. Neither will Melinda." Looking tortured, he added, "I could lose her over it."
Kate said, "Did you seek me out with the expectation of being granted clemency or to try and strike some other deal? Because I can't guarantee that will come about, Cal."
"I made sure that Melinda understood that."
"We came with only one expectation," he said, "and that's of seeing Eben put away."
"He was put away," Kate gently reminded him.
"Not for long enough," he said. "He all but killed that girl."
She looked at Theo, who confirmed Cal's incriminating statement with a nod. Without having realized that she'd been holding her breath, Kate now exhaled slowly. "Are you waiving your right to have counsel present? Please respond audibly." Both said yes. From a personal standpoint, she was exultant. She'd been given an opportunity to atone for her cowardice, her silence and failure to act after she'd been attacked, which had enabled a sexual predator to victimize other women. The personal aspect notwithstanding, it was vital that she make the most of this chance to shut down Eben Clark. She took a deep breath and said, "Theo, why did you lie to cover for Eben?"
"Well, first off, we didn't want to go to jail. But we also owed Eben and his dad."
"Explain that to me."
Between them, they confirmed what Melinda had said about the Clarks' hefty bribes. Theo said,
"Eben rarely comes right out and says what he wants you to do. It's always implied, but clearly understood. In exchange for those financial favors, Cal and I knew what was expected of us when we testified. We went along, like always."
"Like you did the night of the party," Kate said. The two men looked at each other, then both looked uneasily at Zach. He gave them an opening by asking,
"Who suggested the experiment?"
They answered simultaneously,
"Eben."
"Was Rebecca coerced, cajoled, forced?" Zach asked.
"No, no, I swear it," Cal said. "You gotta imagine the scene. It was one of Eben's typical orgies. Open house to anyone who drove an expensive car and was wearing designer labels."
"Even Cal and me," Theo said. "Eben bought us new clothes for that night."
Cal continued, "He hired bouncers to pick and choose who got inside the gate. Unlimited food, drink, sex, and drugs. Name your preference, your poison. It was there, readily available."
"Was Rebecca Eben's date for the night?" Zach asked.
"No, she just showed up," Theo said, "like most everybody. But she stood out. She was a stunner."
"Not anymore."
Zach's sharp retort caused both men to cast their eyes downward. He waited a beat, then continued.
"Had you ever seen her with Eben before that night?"
"No," Theo said. "I didn't even learn her name until the next day when the police questioned me. That's when I found out she was your ex."
I was with Eben when he spotted her, Cal said. He made a crude remark, guy talk, you know. Then he homed in on her. Later, I saw them doing lines of cocaine together. They were drinking vodka from the bottle. With a trace of impatience, Kate stopped them there. This much you testified to in court. Zach and I have read the transcript. It's from this point forward that your story turned murky. You claimed to be hazy on the details because you were so stoned that night. But you remember more than you told the court, and more than you're telling us now.
Get to the part that you lied about, Zach said.
The two men remained silent. Kate had to bite her tongue, but she wanted to wait them out and give them no prompts. She could tell that Zach was on the verge of saying more. She subtly squeezed his knee. Cal spoke up first. The party got wilder, louder, more... When he paused to find the right word, Theo said,
orgiastic.
Right, Cal said. Eben and Rebecca came over to Theo and me and suggested that the four of us go to one of the guest bedrooms upstairs for some grown-up fun and games. Theo nodded.
His words exactly.
You testified that this invitation was nothing remarkable, Kate said. It wasn't. We'd had group sex before, Cal said.
To each his own, Zach said. I don't care about that. How did Rebecca come to be oxygen deprived?
Theo looked pained. He hunched forward and hugged his elbows, leaving Cal to be the narrator. Kate looked at him inquiringly. He said,
Eben likes to watch. He likes to call the shots, direct the action, like a play.
For his gratification, Zach said.
Cal shrugged. A warm-up, anyway. What happened when you got to the bedroom? Kate asked. She let her dress drop. There was nothing underneath. Then Eben and the two of us stripped. Eben told us we could go first. You had sex with Rebecca, Kate said. Cal cut a look toward Zach before coming back to her. Yes, together. We admitted that at the trial. Zach said,
You testified that she was conscious. True or false?
Yes, she was conscious, he said, testiness creeping into his voice. Hell yes, she was stoned, but willing. No, make that eager. She was giggly, flirty, inviting. Uninhibited, he said with emphasis and defiance. Going back to Kate, he said, She was conscious enough to support herself on her hands and knees, okay? Even staged it. Theo in front of her, me behind. He told us not to let up and not to finish until after she'd had an orgasm. Kate said, Was Rebecca all right with the play? With having an audience? Yes, Cal said tightly. I swear to God, I swear on my baby's life, she was into it.
It's not easy to talk about, Theo said thinly, looking warily at Zach.
Zach swore under his breath.
Look, you can take off the filters about the sex, all right? I don't care about that. What I care about, what I want to know, is why Rebecca gets fed through a goddamn rubber hose.
In obvious distress, Theo cupped his hand over his mouth. Kate gave them all time to settle down, then asked, What happened after the menage? Cal resumed, Theo and I sort of crashed. Theo collapsed onto the floor. I stretched out on a lounger across the room. Rebecca stayed on the bed, lying on her back. Eben carried over the bottle of vodka they'd been sharing and told her to open her mouth. When she did, he poured vodka into it, or tried. His aim was off. They made a game of the splashing, and then some spilled into her mouth. She strangled on it. Maybe that's what sparked the idea for Eben. Or maybe that was what he wanted to do all along. I don't know. He stopped and looked over at Theo, who was fiddling with the zipper tab on his rain jacket, still leaving the narrative to Cal. He picked up. Anyway, at first we didn't understand what he was talking about. We'd done some wild things, but never anything like that. He hadn't even mentioned such a thing. What did he say? Kate asked. He told Rebecca he'd like to try something really exotic. It would give her an orgasm like none other. She would erupt. She would see God. Zach said,
"Did he tell her that in order for this miracle to take place, he would choke her?"
"Yes, but he was tender about it. Sweet. He sat down on the bed and stroked her hair. Only if you're game," he said, and she pumped her fist and said, "Fuck yes."
Theo spoke up.
"That's right. Eben looked over at Cal and me and one at a time asked us, 'You heard me ask her, right? And you heard her say yes.' We both nodded yes. We'd heard."
"But Rebecca wanted a safe word," Zach said.
"No," Theo said. "Eben said they needed a safe word."
"Eben?" Kate said. "Are you sure?"
Cal gave a definitive nod.
"Yes. He said if you do kinky, you must have a safe word. Theirs would be Portia. He had a hankering for one," he said. "If Rebecca said Portia, it would get his attention, and he'd be sure to stop." She laughed and said, "Don't count on me saying it." As though he feared that Zach would challenge that claim, he looked straight at him. "That's what she said. Clear as day." Zach cut him no slack.
"But she did say the safe word, didn't she?"
"She tried." Cal shifted his gaze from Zach to Kate. "That's what we lied about." "Eben was on top of her, missionary position," he said, giving an ironic snort. "Since then, I've learned that people who are into this asphyxiation thing usually use a garrote from behind. But Eben was facing her, and he had both hands on her throat, pressing down, right on her windpipe. She was..."
He looked to Theo for help.
"At first, everything appeared normal," Theo said. "They were going hard at it, but that wasn't anything different. Then Eben started up this weird chant. 'You like it. You love it. You love it, don't you?' Other things. Vulgar things. I noticed that her movements changed. They became frantic. She was twisting underneath him, digging her heels into the mattress, thumping his back with her fists, and not like in ecstasy. In panic. I was still on the floor, out of it, but I had enough of my faculties to recognize that she was struggling to breathe. I crawled over to the bed."
He paused, swallowed.
"Her eyes were this big."
He made twin circles with his fingers.
"Terrified, like a trapped animal. Her mouth was open. She was trying to say something, but couldn't. Trying to breathe, but couldn't. I yelled at Eben, told him to stop, but he was past hearing. It was like he was possessed, demonic, and he kept up that creepy chant. Scared the hell out of me. I shouted at Cal."
Cal said, "I was almost too stoned to move. I'd been watching them, but detached, you know, like watching porn on TV. When Theo started shouting and punching Eben's shoulder and trying to drag him off of her, I realized something bad was going on. I couldn't even stand up straight, but I made it over to the bed. I took one look and knew that she was past being able to say anything, so I screamed, 'Porsche, Porsche,' directly into Eben's ear and tried to pull him away. But like Theo said, he was in another zone. Unlike I'd ever seen him, and I'd seen him whacked out completely. This was different. He seemed not to hear or feel or see us. He just kept pounding into her."
He had been talking rapidly, as though feeling the same surge of adrenaline, the same urgency he had in those moments when he'd tried in vain to prevent the tragedy. Now he sagged weakly back into his chair and took several deep breaths. He ran his hand over his face, as if in an attempt to rub away the memory. "Dully," he said. "Eben pulled out and came on her stomach. Then he flopped onto his back beside her and said, 'Man, that was fucking fantastic. Who's next?'" The ponderous silence that followed seemed to have a heartbeat. When Kate finally spoke, she asked quietly,
"Who called 911?
Theo cleared his throat, but his voice was still a croak.
"I did."
"That pissed Eben off," Cal said. "He kept saying that she was fine, that she would come around, but anybody could tell that she hadn't merely passed out.
Theo and I tried CPR, but it didn't do any good. We were so wasted, we probably didn't do it right. While we were frantically trying to get her to breathe, Eben repeated over and over that she had never said the safe word. How was he to know that he was taking it too far? He kept spewing stuff like that, right up till the EMTs got there. They worked on her. They rushed her out. But too much time had passed. I knew she was as good as dead. All four of them started when a voice came from the direction of the kitchen. That was quite a story. There stood Eben, smiling like he'd arrived late to a party.
And you two told it with such passion, he said. Y'all kept me on the edge of my seat. Truly, I'd applaud you, but...
He raised the evil-looking pistol attached to his right arm with a brace.
My hands are full.
Zack lurched toward the end table where Cal had set his father-in-law's gun.
Don't! Eben aimed toward Zack. I'd really hate having to shoot you first, Bridger. If I did, you'd miss out on all the fun. No, I'm saving you for last.
Then he swung the weapon in the direction of Theo.
But you outlived your usefulness ages ago.
Three shots, pop, pop, popped. Theo opened his mouth but didn't utter a sound. He slowly crumpled forward off the hearth and onto the floor. Eben said,
Well, that was easy.
Chapter 36. Doug Pratt came awake abruptly and righted his head, which had been lolling to one side and giving him a crick in his neck. Dr. Gilbreth had come into Rebecca's room, accompanied by a nurse, who went to the far side of the bed and went about checking her vitals and IV. Embarrassed for having been caught sleeping, he started to stand, but decided he didn't have the energy, so he remained seated, as he said to Dr. Gilbreth,
I thought you'd left for the day.
I only went home for dinner. Have you eaten anything?
I will later.
That's what you said hours ago, Mr. Pratt. You really should eat.
He glanced at Rebecca.
I'm not very hungry.
The doctor was holding a manila folder against her chest, obviously waiting for the nurse to finish her routine so she could speak to him alone. It was unusual for her to return to the facility after regular hours. She only did so if a patient was in crisis. He braced himself for what was coming. Discreetly, the nurse finished her tasks and left the room. Dr. Gilbreth closed the door behind her.
I have the results of the most recent lab work.
He'd been afraid of that.
It's not what we had hoped for, Dr. Gilbreth said.
The antibiotic isn't working?
Indications are that the infection is intensifying, not abating.
He drew in a breath so deep it made his breastbone hurt.
So, what now? A stronger antibiotic?
The doctor pulled over the extra chair and sat down facing him.
I was duty-bound to notify Mr. Bridger of any change in her condition. I guess he's winging his way down here, then. Actually, I've been unable to reach him. His cell phone is going directly to voicemail. I've left two messages, but he hasn't called back. The alternate number he gave me is for a Mr. Bingham.
His old coach. They're real close.
Yes, I spoke with him. He said Mr. Bridger is at home in North Carolina.
Cell service may not be that reliable in the mountains.
That's a problem, because according to Mr. Bingham, Mr. Bridger doesn't have a landline. I was wondering if you know how I might go about contacting him up there.
Doug looked at his daughter. He reached out and stroked her cheek with the backs of his fingers. He could tell her fever was high, higher than it had been this morning.
Is the infection serious enough that you have to talk to Zack tonight? The antibiotic hasn't had much time. Maybe by tomorrow morning it will have kicked in.
He pointed to the folder containing the condemning lab report.
You could check things out again and, if called for, up the dosage.
That would require Mr. Bridger's authorization.
This created a quandary. He could buy time by pleading ignorance and making it difficult for Dr. Gilbreth to reach Zack. But in the meanwhile, Rebecca's condition could worsen to the point where no amount of antibiotic would save her.
If the doctor wasn't going to increase her medication before getting Zach's okay, then he was left with only one choice. He said,
"There's a deputy sheriff up there who's familiar with Zach. His name is Dave Morris. I have his cell number." "Still going to voicemail," Bing reported to Melinda with disgust. "Zach hates phones. Has a bad habit of ignoring calls. No luck with Kate?"
Melinda held up her phone so Bing could hear Kate's request that the caller leave a name and number. She clicked off.
"Querulous," Bing said. "Why'd she give you her cell number if she didn't plan on answering calls?"
"I'm sure there's an explanation."
"I'm sure there is, too."
Bing figured he knew what Zach and Kate were doing that made them unavailable at the same time. He scowled and said under his breath,
"Hope they're enjoying themselves."
"Did the doctor in New Orleans say that it was an emergency?" Melinda asked.
"Not in so many words, but that's the feeling I got. I don't think she would have resorted to calling me in search of Zach if it weren't."
"Lord," Melinda pressed her hands against her face. "If she dies and Eben learns of it, he's liable to do anything."
Acting like an exclamation point, her doorbell rang. She and Bing sprang from their chairs and headed for the front of the house. His tricky LCL chose then to act up. By the time he'd popped his knee back into place and caught up to Melinda, she had answered the door. The man said,
"Mrs. Parsons, my name is Sid Clark."
Bing recognized him from having seen pictures.
Melinda bristled. "I know who you are."
"May I come in?"
"No." She was about to close the door in his face when he raised a hand.
"Please, I'm here to see Cal."
Bing stepped up.
"What do you want with him?" "And you are?" "What do you want with her husband?"
Clark frowned over Bing's rudeness, but he said tightly,
"I can't locate Eben. I'm hoping that Cal knows where he is."
Melinda looked at Bing with apprehension, like he was supposed to know what to do in this situation. Hell, he didn't even know these people. He didn't know why Zach chose now not to answer his goddamn phone. He didn't know shit. What business was this of his, anyway? Why wasn't he at home relaxing in his chair with a cold beer and watching knights in armor chop each other's heads off? In a guttural voice, he said to Melinda,
"You better let him in,"
and moved aside to allow Clark into the foyer. But that's as far as he got. Melinda blocked him from advancing any farther.
"Cal isn't here. He hasn't been at home since early this morning, and he hasn't answered his phone all day. I assume he's with Eben."
"Why do you assume that?"
She gave a bitter laugh and rolled her eyes.
"I don't know where they are, Mr. Clark. If I did, I would go there and pull Cal back by the hair of his head, if that's what it took to get him away from your son. He's poisonous."
Despite the insult, Clark's expression remained impassive.
"Did Cal mention going to Belize?"
"Belize?"
"That's what Eben told me this morning. A getaway. The three of them."
"Theo too?"
"Yes. Just like old times," he said.
He told them about Eben scheduling the private jet and his own confirmation with the pilot.
"I believe Eben covered his bases on the outside chance that I would check. But even after the pilot confirmed the flight, I was suspicious of this sudden getaway plan and thought it might be a decoy. So I went to the FBO on the pretext of seeing them off. The plane was on the tarmac, fueled and ready to go. Red carpet rolled out, catering on board and champagne chilling. The two pilots, the flight attendant, the traffic controllers in the tower, we all waited for the arrival of the three passengers, none of whom showed up."
Melinda backed into the wall and leaned against it for support. She looked done in. Bing wondered how many more hammer blows she could take. Sid Clark continued,
"Over the course of that two-hour wait, I spoke to Eben three times by cell phone. He was as chipper as always. He apologized for the delay in their getting to the airfield. He said they'd been held up. First the rain, then the traffic, then a necessary return to the house to pick up something he'd forgotten to pack. A lie soon debunked by our housekeeper."
He gave a rueful smile.
"My son obviously has no scruples about lying to his own father.
Ultimately, I canceled the flight and began searching for him. I started with Theo. According to his co-workers, he put in a full day at the library and left at 5 o'clock, his normal quitting time. But his car is still in the employee parking lot.
He let that sink in, then said,
I ask you again, Mrs. Parsons, do you know where Cal is?
What are you, deaf?
Bing had taken an instant dislike to Sid Clark. He'd never trusted men who were smooth-talking during a crisis or who wore shoes with tassels.
She already told you she didn't know.
It's all right, Bing, Melinda said. She told Clark what she knew about Cal's reporting to work but leaving early. He didn't tell anyone. That isn't like him. It's not like him to leave the house with a suitcase and ignore my calls, either.
Clark took a moment to absorb all that, then said, My oldest and best friend killed himself last night.
The statement had come from out of nowhere and was apropos of nothing that Bing could tell. Melinda seemed just as taken aback.
His daughter informed me of it this morning.
Clark said,
It was shocking news. Even more disturbing is that an Up suicide note.
Up? Melinda said. Uncle Up, the lawyer?
Yes. How do you know him?
She wetted her lips. I know about him from Cal. On your behalf, he bribed Cal and Theo to give false testimony at Eben's trial. Clark didn't admit it aloud, but he looked resigned over their knowing and continued what he'd been saying before Melinda's interruption.
In his note, Up held Eben largely responsible for the unbearable guilt that had driven him to take his life.
He paused and breathed deeply.
He closed the note with a warning for Ms. Lennon.
Bing reacted with a start.
What?
I warned her too, Melinda said, and I didn't even know about this suicide note.
When was this? Clark asked.
Melinda told him about Kate and Zach's visit. I told them I was afraid that Eben would make a preemptive strike. Sid Clark had begun to look a little green around the gills.
This is troubling. Eben's clever. He's conniving. He cooked up this Belize trip to throw us off track. I'm afraid to surmise why he went to all that bother.
Bing fisted a handful of Clark's expensive lapel.
You're afraid to surmise that your psycho son is going after Kate and Zach?
I don't want to hazard a...
Fuck you!
Bing let go of Clark's lapel, reached past him, and snatched his jacket off the hall tree, then poked his index finger at the tip of Clark's aristocratic nose.
If he harms either of them, you won't have clever, conniving Eben to worry about anymore, because he'll be dead. I'll kill the little shit myself.
Melinda grabbed his arm.
Bing, wait! Cal's got the pistol, remember?
Pistol, Clark said.
Ignoring him, Melinda wailed. Bing, Cal will do whatever Eben tells him to.
I'm betting he won't, honey, Bing said. I'm betting he won't. You're welcome to come along.
She grabbed her handbag, pushed past Sid Clark, and ran after Bing. Chapter 37. The gunfire was still reverberating off the high ceiling of Zach's living room when he disregarded Eben's warning and lunged from his chair toward the table where Cal's pistol lay. Another shot halted him, inertia rocking him forward as he regained his balance.
You're just asking for it, aren't you, Bridger? Eben said. Touch that gun and your new girlfriend dies, or you can sit the fuck down.
Zach raised his hands and began backing toward the seat beside Kate that he'd just left.
No, over there.
Eben motioned with the braced pistol toward a tall-backed armchair, one of a matching pair that sat on either side of the wide stone chimney. Zach calculated the distance between the chair and Kate. No, he'd be too far away from her. He stayed where he was. Eben snickered.
Oh, I see your dilemma. How about I just solve it for you?
He aimed the pistol at Kate.
I'm going.
Zach backed over to the specified chair and sat. Kate had cupped both hands over her mouth in horror as she'd witnessed Theo's execution. She lowered her hands now and curled her fingers over the edge of the sofa cushion, as though holding onto it for dear life. Her eyes met Zach's, communicating to him that she understood the peril they were in, that she was mindful of Eben's derangement and their need to go along with him for as long as possible until an opportunity to escape presented itself, if ever. Eben came farther into the room. When he reached the end table, he used his left hand to heave up the edge of it until it fell over. The ceramic lamp crashed. The glass shattered in the frame holding the picture of Zack and his parents. The pistol that Cal had brought landed beyond the edge of the rug and went sliding across the hardwood floor, but in the opposite direction of Zack's chair. He couldn't hope to reach it before Eben shot him, which would leave Kate at this maniac's mercy. Eben walked over to the pistol on the floor and nudged it with the toe of his shoe, chuckling with derision. "Mine's a whole lot bigger than yours, Bridger." Zack wasn't bothered by the phallic innuendo, but the comparison of the two firearms was worrisome. Zack was no expert, but he recognized the difference between a small 5-shot revolver like Cal's and Eben's fully automatic 45. The brace was secured to his forearm by sturdy straps, which made the weapon an extension of his hand. He could kill all of them in a blink. "You're supposed to be in Belize," that from Cal, who was staring at Theo's unmoving body. "Well, hello, Cal," Eben said. "I thought you'd nodded off. Good of you to rejoin us." Eben's cavalier tone jolted the other man. He jerked his head around toward Eben. No longer in a stupor of disbelief, his eyes blazed hatred and contempt. "Surprised to see me?" Eben laughed and gave an exaggerated wink. "I thought you and Theo had agreed a little too quickly to the getaway idea. I had an inkling that you might conspire to turn on me, try to strike a deal with the state prosecutor over there." He pointed the pistol at Kate again, and Zack's gut clenched. But Eben's attention immediately reverted to Cal. "I took the precautionary measure of going to your workplaces today and putting a transmitter, courtesy of Simply Simon, who keeps a warehouse stocked with toys like that, on each of your cars. What's funny?" He stopped to laugh. "I was doing that during our phone call when I offered to send a limo for you. You declined so graciously, Cal." His voice changed to one of feminine sweetness. "Thanks all the same, Eben, but Theo and I can handle our own transportation. You were downright syrupy, but you were lying through your teeth. You never intended to fly to Belize with me." "Not a chance in hell," Cal said. Eben snapped his fingers. "I bet you feared that you wouldn't come back from that trip. You were afraid that you and Theo would fall victim to a violent crime, or get eaten by a jaguar in the jungle, or drown in the Caribbean. Did the thought cross your mind that the two of you might never return from one of our jaunts?" Cal only glared. "After all we've meant to each other, Cal, how could you think that I might arrange a fatality? Although," Eben said, dragging out the word, "your demises would have been convenient because, let's face it, you did pose a threat to the quality of my future." Cal still said nothing. "Anyhow," Eben continued, "you picked up Theo right on schedule. So far, so good. But you didn't steer toward the airfield. No, you sped off in the opposite direction. I can't tell you how much that disappointed me. My two best friends cutting out on me." He shook his head in sadness, then shrugged. "The transmitter led me right to you. I parked my car next to yours there among the trees at the turnoff. Hell of a trek to this house, though, what with the fog and all. But I've got excellent night vision." Suddenly, his affable posturing vanished. His eyes narrowed on Cal with malice. "You fucking traitor. Did your Pollyanna wife talk you into betraying me? Hasn't she realized yet that behind your sexy smile and bedroom eyes, you're nothing but white trash? She shut up about my wife. Or what? You're going to engage me in fisticuffs? You're going to burn, Eben." "Oh, I don't think so. Dollface there thought she had it all figured out. Didn't you, Ms. Lennon?" He looked at Kate. "State prosecutor," he scoffed. With his free hand, he reached into the pocket of his trousers and pulled out what appeared to Zack to be a scrap of black cloth. But then Eben dangled it, and Zack realized it was a thong panty.
You're nothing but pussy, Eben said to Kate. Strutting through the halls of justice in your stilettos, trying to do a man's job. Sorry, baby. Your little project failed. You underestimated me.
He balled up the thong and threw it at her, striking her in the face with it. She didn't flinch. She let the thong drop into her lap. Looking him squarely in the eye, she said,
Yes, Mr. Clark, I egregiously underestimated you. She speaks, he chortled, using big words, too.
I underestimated your depravity, she said. However, I do understand why you exploit it with such enthusiasm. It's all you've got. Without it, you'd be a waste of the space you occupy. You'd be a speck.
Zack wanted to cheer her. Without a qualm, she was facing down a monster. Inside, she may be quaking in terror, but outwardly, her demeanor remained cool. Her voice was low-pitched, definitive, tinged with scorn. However this ended, she had achieved her goal. She may never prosecute Eben Clark in court, but by showing no fear of him, she had reduced him to insignificance. It was the best offensive play she could have devised. The affront wasn't lost on Eben. His face had turned florid.
She's right, Cal said. You're a waste of space, all posturing and guff. I can't believe I ever bought into your bullshit.
You never bought a goddamn thing, Eben sneered. I paid your way, and I don't remember you ever griping about my generosity.
Generosity? That's a laugh. Anything you did for you.
Eben pretended to ponder that, then sighed theatrically.
Too true.
What thrill did you get out of killing Theo? Cal said, his voice cracking.
Harmless Theo. For years, he licked your boots. He tried so hard to please you, to get one kind word from you, and you killed him. How could you do it?
Well, I pulled the trigger. Like this. Zack saw it coming, but was helpless to prevent it. Eben couldn't have missed if he'd tried. Cal was too close, his torso too large a target. His arms flailed as the bullet struck, and he dropped. Kate shouted in outrage and horror.
No!
Eben swung the pistol toward her, but Zack was already on him, having lurched from the chair just as he'd fired on Cal. He grabbed Eben's right arm and redirected the lethal apparatus away from Kate and toward the ceiling. The next burst of gunfire shattered the globes of the chandelier. Glass rained down. Eben caught a shard. He yelped and raised his left hand to his cheek. Zack wrapped both hands around the encased barrel of the pistol and angled it away from himself, away from Kate, as he rammed his shoulder into Eben's middle, like he would a tackling dummy. Digging in, he pushed and kept going until Eben lost his footing and fell backward. His head banged hard against the granite of the wet bar. Zack spun away. Kate, the lamps! She was already off the sofa. She ran over and slapped the wall switch. It plunged the room into total darkness, but Zack had a clear path to the front door. He bolted toward it, reflexively ducking his head as Eben, screaming in fury, released another barrage of bullets. Kate already had the door opened. Zack shoved her out onto the porch, then grabbed her hand and ran like hell. Dave Morris had replaced the Glock that asshole Bridger had thrown into the woods the night of their fight. He'd gone searching for it in daylight, but it had been hopeless. A buddy who ran a pawn shop had sold him one under the counter. Most of the swelling in his face had gone down, but the bruises were still evident. Everybody in town knew who was responsible for the whipping he'd taken, and that was the most galling thing of all, to have been bested by that has-been. And even after he'd done the bastard a favor and told him about his ex-father-in-law's spying scheme, Bridger had won the ear of Sheriff Meeker, who, with Bridger's urging, was keeping him on unpaid suspension indefinitely. After all the hardship he continued to suffer on Bridger's account, he questioned why in hell he was risking his neck to make this drive up the mountain in pea soup conditions to deliver a message. However, the request had come from a doctor, Gilbreth, he thought she'd said, and it was more about Bridger's ex-wife than it was about the asshole himself. And Morris wasn't completely immune to compassion.
He was doing his good deed for the day, for the year, maybe. But when he reached the turnoff to Bridger's place and discovered a chain across it, his altruism receded. Who the hell and what the fuck? He drummed his fingers on the steering wheel, considering his options. He wasn't an errand boy. He wasn't Bridger's private secretary, and sure as hell wasn't his buddy. But he remembered his ex-wife as being a hot ticket. Face a 10, figure an 11, and now she was on life support, for Christ's sake. In the trunk of his car was a pair of bolt cutters. He'd used them to carve that gash down the side of Bridger's pickup. To make up for that, he would deliver this damn message, and then they'd be square. He'd be done with Mr. MVP once and for all. Cursing himself for being a soft-hearted sucker, he got out and took a mag light and the bolt cutters from his trunk, then sauntered over and bent down to inspect the chain. When he saw its heft and the quality of the lock, he muttered, "No way." Biting through those links was going to require more effort than he was willing to exert, and his bolt cutters would probably break before the chain did. And this really wasn't Dave Morris's problem, was it? In order to drive up here, he'd left a cozy bar, a cold long neck, and a $10 wager riding on a pool tourney. No, that doctor down in New Orleans would have to find another way to contact Bridger. He had tried. He was walking back to his car when gunshots stopped him in his tracks. Having lived in the area all his life, he knew that fog was deceptive. It could muffle sound or magnify it. It fooled you about the direction of its origin and from how far away it had traveled. Even on clear days, sound waves ricocheted off the mountains in ways that defied physics. But hell if he didn't think those shots had come from Bridger's place. When he heard another spate of gunfire, he was certain of it. He dropped the bolt cutters but kept his mag light. He chambered a round in his new Glock, jumped the chain across the turnoff, and started up Bridger's private road, plowing through the fog. Zack was so familiar with the trail he'd charted, he could run it in the dark, in the fog. He knew where there were boulders to dodge, low limbs to duck, fallen tree trunks to hurdle. He knew where runoffs, no more than mere trickles, could make rocks and forest debris hazardously slippery. "How can you see where you're going?" Kate was panting, but she kept her voice at a whisper. Zack had cautioned her to be as quiet as possible because he hadn't wanted to make it any easier for Eben to follow them. He hoped that whatever inevitable sounds they made would be overridden by the thrum of the waterfall.
"Just step where I step," he said.
"How do you know where to step?"
"I hike this trail several times a week."
"This is your hike?"
"This is it."
"This is a trail?"
"Low branch coming up on your right."
She cleared the branch without breaking stride.
"Do you think Eben is coming after us?"
"What do you think?"
"Murderers don't leave eyewitnesses."
Zack guided her around a flat rock where he sometimes stopped to drink from his water bottle.
"But unlike you," she huffed, "Eben won't know where he's going. He won't be able to follow this trail. He'll turn back. He probably already has."
When Zack didn't respond, she said,
"You don't think so, do you?"
"I think we need to keep running."
"So do I. How far to the turnaround?" He didn't have the heart to tell her that the turnaround was the Whitewater River at the bottom of the gorge.
"Just stay right behind me and don't let go of my hand."
"Is it downhill all the way?"
"That's in our favor."
"But it's steep."
"If you lose your footing, I've got you."
Thank God they'd put their boots back on. Doing this barefoot would have been impossible, but their outerwear had been left behind, and the air was cold and laden with mist. Their labored exhales vaporized, swirling the fog in front of their faces before becoming one with it. He wished for their cell phones, for the key fob to Kate's car. He wished for the pistol that had been of no use to Cal. He wished Kate didn't appear so small and easily breakable in contrast to the rugged, unforgiving terrain. He hoped she was right and that Eben wouldn't risk coming after them. He hoped that Eben had emptied the clip and wouldn't have another. But he reasoned that those hopes were probably in vain. Eben believed himself to be invincible. He would stop at nothing. And then, although he'd done everything he could to avoid stumbling blocks. An exposed tree root caught the toe of Kate's boot, and she fell. Her knee landed hard. Reflexively, she cried out. Zack came to a dead stop. She stayed as she was on the ground until he gave her a hand up.
"Oh, God," she mouthed. "I'm sorry."
"Are you all right?"
She nodded.
"Hurt?"
She shook her head and then would have said something, but he placed his index finger vertically against her lips. Cocking his head, he listened.
"Yoo-hoo!"
The eerie, high-pitched call came from above and behind them, dashing their faint hope that Eben had given up the chase. Although it was difficult to tell how far back he trailed them, he was close enough to have discerned that they'd stopped.
"Giving up?" he called. "You must be getting winded. I know I am. Who made this damn trail anyway? Must have been you, Bridger."
He fired four rounds. The loud report of the four shots caused both of them to cringe, but they also caused a thought to flit through Zack's mind. Before it left him, he snagged it with a whispered,
"Fourth and short."
"What?"
Kate mimed. He reviewed the idea for all of a second and a half, then said to Kate,
"Don't worry anymore about making noise. Let's haul."
With no more explanation than that, he grabbed her hand and took off again, going faster than before, trying to make up for the gain they'd lost when they'd paused. His long strides ate up distance. Without complaint, Kate kept pace. Whenever he felt her about to tumble, he drew hard on her hand to keep her upright. They'd been moving so rapidly, she sensed immediately when he began to let up. Her breaths were coming from between her lips in ghostly puffs.
"Why are we slowing down?"
He towed her forward until they came to the brink of a chasm. At some point in time, it had been caused by a geological calamity. To Zack's reckoning, it cut across the entire width of the mountain face like a crooked smile. The course of his trail had been predicated on it, because the crevice was narrower here than at any other place he'd found, and he'd explored it extensively. When Kate realized she was overlooking a void, she immediately tensed and tried to back away. Zack held fast to her hand. Because of her fear of heights, he'd known she would balk, but she had to jump it, blindly. He placed his hands on her shoulders.
"It's not that wide. I can practically step across it. Not that deep, either."
"I can't see the bottom."
"Because of the fog. I'll go first. Move back three steps to give yourself a running start, then jump. I'll be there to catch you."
"I can't."
"No way in hell would I let you fall."
"I can't do it."
"You can, Kate. You have to. You have to now."
He didn't have time to cajole her. He kissed her hard and quick, then released her abruptly and leaped across, landing easily, although he had to admit that being unable to see the other side would have terrified him if he hadn't known that it was closer than one's imagination might make it.
"Stopped again?"
Eben called.
"Ready to cry, Uncle?"
"Kate," Zack hissed.
"I can't see you."
"I'm here. Do it. Now."
He heard her take the backward steps, then her running footsteps. He knew the instant she launched herself. He reached out. She actually overshot and landed against his chest like a fluttering bird who'd flown into a window pane. He wrapped his arms around her, hugged her tight, and drew her behind the trunk of a stout tree. He bent his head down low and burrowed into her neck where he could feel her pounding pulse.
"Perfect jump. Perfect. Now don't move a muscle or make a sound."
"What?"
"Stay behind this tree."
"What?"
"Trust me, Kate. No matter what happens, do not move, and not a single sound. Got it?"
She clutched at the sleeve of his shirt, but he pulled away and dashed across the path. As he'd anticipated, the sound of him smashing into undergrowth drew Eben's gunfire toward him and away from Kate. Bullets whizzed through the fog. One smacked into a nearby tree trunk. Another struck the rock formation Zack had crouched behind. When the fusillade stopped, Zack howled Kate's name.
"No!"
Out of the fog came Eben's evil cackle.
"Uh-oh."
"Kate! Kate! Oh, Jesus!"
Zack gave a tortured shout.
Clark, you murdering son of a bitch!
Zack could hear tree branches snapping and rocks scattering underfoot as Eben made his way down the path.
Kate, talk to me, Zack crooned.
You're breaking my heart, Bridger.
Eben was breathing so heavily now, Zack heard every labored inhale and exhale. He was picking up speed, coming on fast. Zack moaned Kate's name.
Please.
Aw, is she dead?
Eben taunted. A thud. He'd run into something. He stopped, cursed a blue streak, fired several rounds. Then he began moving again, huffing breaths, rapidly stumbling along.
That's too bad, Bridger. Y'all looked so cute together.
Where are you, Clark? Zack shouted. I'm gonna kill you.
Oh, I don't think so.
When the ground suddenly dropped out from under Eben, he uttered an exclamation of shock. As he fell, the pistol attached to his hand clattered against the sheer rock walls of the chasm, which tapered to a jagged floor much farther down than Zack had intimated to Kate. In the last